SGPC, which administers historic Sikh shrines, have called for a worldwide ban on the film. The group now wants all television serials and film depicting Sikhs and their way of life approved before screening them. From Ahmedabad in India, Penu Alex for Free Speech Radio News.
You've been listening to Free Speech Radio News. I'm Aura Bogado.
And you're listening to radio station WUSB, Stony Brook, New York, where the time is 3 minutes after 6 o'clock. Time for Off the Wall. Good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you until this hour is up. And I'm still recovering from the Midwest. Not the Midwest per se, but traveling to the Midwest and traveling all the way back in the 2600 converted telephone company van. Which, you know, I have to really be amazed that that thing is able to still drive cross country. I think it's older than most of our listeners. And standard transmission to boot, so it's really it's a lot of fun when you get on, up there with all the 18-wheelers. But I wouldn't trade it for anything because it's just a whole lot of fun. And the Dayton Hamvention is the event that took place this last weekend, where ham radio people from all over the world gather and sell things and trade things and hang out together, various things like that. And I'm always surprised, I'm always amazed by the reception that we get over there, because computer hackers, phone freaks, generally aren't the same as those people that legitimately use ham radio frequencies all the time, 24 hours a day. Hackers are sometimes seen as those people who break the rules and sometimes break things. But we all know that's not true. I'm amazed, though, how many people really get it over there. I'm amazed how many people are actually able to not prejudge and to learn by the various things that we say through the magazine, through the radio shows. A lot of people who listen to the radio shows out there as well. And it's always good to meet new people, see old people again. And it's cool, too, because, you know, you're talking to somebody, someone in their 60s or 70s, and all of a sudden they tell you, you know, I used to blue box. You just never would have guessed it looking at this person that they actually sat around with a blue box and made free phone calls back in the day. It's something else. But it's part of the whole experience. I highly recommend it to anybody who has a weekend next May to head out to Dayton, Ohio. And there are easier ways to go than driving, that's for sure. Some people fly. But I'm not one of them. I'm one of the people that actually does it the hard way. And it's really the only way you can bring all the material out there that people are interested in. The magazine, the DVDs of various sorts, the sound recordings from our conferences, T-shirts, things like that. Be amazed how many people were walking around that place with hacker T-shirts on after a while. So it was kind of weird. But I've been out there for a few of them, and most likely will be out there again. And hopefully having a lot more fun and adventures. Now, driving on the interstate is always an adventure for me. I always get into that. A lot of people hate driving. I like driving. Well, going out there took 19 hours because of all kinds of traffic and nonsense like that. You know, okay, that's a bit much. Going back was a lot easier, a lot more fun. Even though there were some hassles along the way. Now, this happens once in a blue moon. And I'm sure people have experienced it. Maybe you all haven't experienced it, but if you have, then you certainly remember it for the rest of your life. You're driving along, and all of a sudden you see the brake lights. Okay, that's happened to all of us. Everybody stops or slows down. In this particular case, though, everybody came to a dead stop in the middle of the night. This was traveling on I-78 in Pennsylvania Sunday night. And everybody just stopped. Everybody just was hanging out on the road, and seconds turned to minutes, and and minutes just kept adding up, and nobody knew what was going on. Of course, there are no radio stations that broadcast traffic out there. Probably no radio stations with human beings in them out there. I even called some people back home and asked them if they could hop on the internet and find out what's going on the interstate. But apparently there's no site that actually does that. At least they couldn't find any. So we're all sitting there on the interstate, and after a while, you know, people start getting out of their cars, people turn off their headlights, turn off their motors, and they start wandering around, visiting with each other, and sort of hanging out in the in the night air. And I gotta tell you, it's it puts things in perspective. You realize, look, this is the interstate. I'm standing on the interstate. I'm standing in the middle of the interstate. I'm touching the Jersey barrier, whatever those things are called. You know, the big white things between oncoming and outgoing traffic. I knelt down and touched one of the reflectors on the dotted white lines. I always wanted to know what those felt like. Just sort of, you know, hung out. Looked at the moon. Listened to the sound of idling engines. And various other noises that you hear in the middle of nowhere. And we actually had a CB. Not a CB we could talk on, fortunately, I guess, because we would have been part of this whole madness. But a scanner where we could listen to CB. And I realized doing that, listening to CB, that CB is really basically the same as a completely unmoderated IRC channel, where you ask a serious question and you get about 50 stupid answers. And nobody really knows what's going on. It's a whole bunch of idiots and a whole bunch of people with big egos of know-it-all. But the one thing nobody really could answer accurately is just what in God's name is going on here. So we tried to make the best of it, and that's all you can do. Some people played some music, some people... I don't want to say people set up a barbecue right there in the middle of the interstate, but wouldn't that have been cool? You know, you had no idea how long this was going to take, and in actuality, it took over an hour before we started to move again. Now, this is also very interesting. When you're sitting there on the interstate, and people turn off their headlights, and I guess some people actually go to sleep, the cops must know about this, because there was a cop in the opposite lane, the oncoming traffic lane. When the whole thing was over, he just was driving down very slowly, leaning on his siren and honking his horn. It was his job to wake up the motorists. Yeah, this happens often enough where they actually have a guy to do that. I never would have thought of it. You just think that everyone's going to go and the person in front of them goes, but no, it doesn't always work when you're sitting around for that long. So yeah, I got to watch that. Learned a whole lot about what the interstate is really like when you're not driving on it. Of course, the other side was driving really, really fast, and we could see them. But it wasn't quite the same for us. And in the end, you know, when it was all over, when we finally got to move out, you want to see something, you know? You want to see carnage, or you want to see, you know, how badly the construction zone was, or whatever it was that held you up. You just want something in exchange. But we got nothing. Not a single police car, not a single crumpled up vehicle, not a tow truck. Absolutely nothing. We stopped there. We don't know why we stopped there. We heard all kinds of things on the CB radio. Everything from aliens to overturned cars to really, really heavy construction going on, which we didn't see any evidence of that either. So if anybody knows what happened on I-78 last Sunday evening heading east in Pennsylvania, please let me know, because the curiosity has been driving me crazy. Now, that's only happened to me a couple of other times. I've stopped plenty of times, but never for that long. Almost for that long, on the way to Dayton. In fact, the very last possible moment before we arrived at the hotel we were staying at, these cops got in front of us and started driving at about 3 miles an hour. I kid you not, three cops got in front of us and just were going really, really slowly, and obviously they didn't want us to pass them. And that was all a ploy to get us to slow down because they were doing construction ahead. In fact, they were demolishing a bridge, and they decided to pick that moment to do it. We had to wait about a half hour for them to finish. But as far as really, really long periods where you're just sitting there and you don't know what's going on, that's only happened to me a couple of other times before. Once was in Yugoslavia, actually. I was on a train heading to Bulgaria, and the train just stopped. And we were all just sitting in the train. Nobody knew why the train stopped. It just did. And eventually people started to go outside, explore the countryside, find a well so people could have water. And the whole thing just turned into this big kind of communal hangout. The people in my train compartment offered me food. We didn't speak the same language, but everybody kind of communicated in a rather nice way. And then another train pulled up. More people got out. It turned into a real community. And then after I think a couple of hours in that case, the train suddenly blew its horn, which was a universal symbol for, okay, everybody, get your asses back here. And everybody did, and we took off, never found out what that was about. And there was another time in England. I was driving around Leeds. That's the town that was named after the soccer team, Leeds United. And we were driving on the wrong side of the road, as they're prone to do. And we just stopped, and there was no radio to listen to. There was no traffic report. They didn't have that over there. I don't know why I was driving up there, but I was. I was driving on the wrong side of the road, which was a lot easier than you might think it would be. You have to shift with your other hand, but you can do that. You can do that. The brake is in the same place. It's just on the other side of the car. And then after about an hour and a half, we started moving. Never found out what that was all about. I think three times in my life this has happened. So the most recent time being on Sunday. And that was, I think, probably the most pleasant because, it wasn't bad weather. You could hang out outside and just appreciate the fact that you're standing in the middle of the interstate and you're not in any danger. So all kinds of fun things will happen to you if you take your vehicle and drive long distances. I always like to hear stories from people. And you can write to us here at this radio program, otw@2600.com. That is our mailing address, and we'll be reading a couple of letters from people in future moments. First, let's take a look at what's going on in this wacky world of ours. There's turmoil all over the globe. There's intrigue and mystery and all sorts of fascinating things, but the Associated Press has chosen to put the Michael Jackson trial as the front story again, and who are we to question that? Despite his many jokes at Michael Jackson's expense, Jay Leno took the stand today as a witness for the defense. This is important. This is international news. You can't get more relevant than this. Continuing, it was part of an effort to show Jackson's accuser's family, double possessive there, Jackson's accuser's family. All right, let me just start the sentence over again since I ruined it. It was part of an effort to show Jackson's accuser's family. You know what? The sentence is just not right. Was part of an effort to show Jackson's accuser's family No, that's right. I'm sorry. I just got derailed. Okay, one more time. It was part of an effort to show Jackson's accuser's family tried to get cash from celebrities. But the Tonight Show host said the boy never asked for money. He did say the boy had called him a number of times about 5 years ago. How does a kid get Jay Leno's phone number? No one's answering that question. I'd like to know how that's possible. Anyway, he called him a number of times about 5 years ago, leaving a series of voice messages saying that Leno was the greatest and that he was the boy's hero. Well, that sounds familiar, doesn't it? Leno became annoyed at the calls. Gee, I wonder why. And told a friend of his who also knew the boy's family. She said she'd take care of it and had the boy killed. No, I'm sorry, reading ahead here. She said she'd take care of it and the calls stopped. And Leno eventually did call the boy and speak to him when the child was in the hospital fighting cancer. The defense had suggested that Leno notified police about the calls, but Leno indicated that hadn't happened. A paralegal, continuing with Michael Jackson, there's actually two stories about Michael Jackson here. A paralegal at a law firm that handled a lawsuit by the family of Michael Jackson's accuser says the boy's mother once threatened her life. Mary Holzer testified the exchange happened after the mother admitted that the injuries she claimed to have received from JCPenney security guards really came from her then-husband. Boy, she's a real work of art, isn't she? Unbelievable. Holzer says she told the woman she couldn't lie, and she says that's when the boy's mother threatened her life. Because not only could she lie, but she could also kill. Multifaceted. She says the mother told her she had ties to the Mexican mafia, and that they would kill Holzer and her 9-year-old daughter. Holzer said she never reported the true cause of the mother's injuries because she was terrified. The accuser's family won a $152,000 settlement from JCPenney after accusing store guards of roughing them up. Oh, boy, where is this going to end? You just have to wonder. Wonder why we care. Okay, in other less important news, insurgent attacks in and around Baghdad have taken a deadly toll on U.S. forces in recent days, once again. The military says 9 American troops have been killed in 2 days of attacks. 14 have died since Sunday. Yeah, Michael Jackson's more important than this. A military spokesman says 3 U.S. soldiers were killed today in central Baghdad when a car bomb exploded next to their convoy. A short while later, gunmen killed a U.S. soldier in a drive-by shooting. Yesterday, a Marine was killed during an attack on a U.S. base in Ramadi. Also Monday, 4 soldiers were killed in an attack south of Baghdad. 5 soldiers died on Sunday, 3 in attacks in Mosul, another when his patrol was hit by a car bomb, and a 5th in a vehicle accident. Well, yeah, I see where we're going with this whole Iraq thing. It makes a lot of sense now. They're free. They're free to go around killing. So much better. Oh, my God. It's worth all the sacrifices. I saw a piece on CNN over the weekend which really kind of surprised and shocked me. It's something, a feature they have every now and then called a soldier's story, except this was a story about soldiers who had deserted. Now, get this. How many deserters do you think there are in the U.S. Army? Say, in the year 2004. This surprised me. It really did. Because you never hear reports. You never hear media reports about this. You always get the sense that, wrong as it may be, the military is behind the commander-in-chief and will follow orders no matter what. As any good military should. So, you know, I figure maybe, okay, a couple of dozen of these guys actually have the guts to walk away from it, to go AWOL, to not show up, to refuse to carry out orders, to tell them a few things about why this is all wrong. And no, it's more than that. It's more than that. 6,000. That's right, 6,000 deserters last year. in the United States military. I mean, that is just simply incredible. And the military is having more and more problems signing people up. Why do you think that is? Because people are actually thinking. And if the people themselves are not actually thinking, certainly their parents are. Because they have a little more experience, they know how these things tend to go. How soldiers are the ones who are forgotten. How they're told to do impossible things, give up their lives, and if they're lucky enough to make it through, they don't get a whole lot out of it in the end. And where do we all go from this? Nobody really knows. Nobody knows why we do these things. Because some lunatic someplace decides this is the right move, and a couple of decades later, nobody understands it. Be interesting to see where we are in a couple of decades as far as this goes, but the story I saw on CNN, though, was focusing on two of these guys who had gone up to Canada. I was kind of surprised that you could actually go to Canada and have any chance of living a life up there. I figured the two countries were kind of tied together as far as databases, making sure that none of our soldiers managed to escape. But apparently there is still some welcoming going on up there where people are allowed to live in a somewhat free environment. So these two guys, one had had deserted when he realized that he was expected to fire on unarmed teenagers who just happened to be in the wrong place in their own city. That's when he realized what a monster he had become, or was expected to become. And another realized how insane the whole thing was when he was told that if captured by Iraqi forces, that he should put a bullet in his own head. And when you hear something like that, that's really what the bad guys do, isn't it? You know, when you want the evil emperor's plans not to be revealed, when you want to make sure you're not tortured into giving out information that could be used against your team. I don't know, it just seems to me that's the way the bad guys operate. Plus, when you think about it, there really has not been any case of U.S. military being tortured by any Iraqis. Yeah, there have been hostages, but not military hostages. So it's kind of strange to hear that kind of a command. But apparently that's what they're telling people. At least that's what some of the commanders are telling people. So the two of these two guys decided they'd had enough, and now they're living in Canada. I was amazed not to see any kind of judgment being passed on them, just basically telling their story how they've lost so much, how they can't go home now. And how there are so many more of them. Made you realize just how screwed up the situation really is. And how it's not getting any better. So yeah, 6,000. 6,000 in a single year. God knows how many this year. And of course, enrollment way down. In fact, they've even had to stop trying to recruit people for the military because the recruiters have resorted to such dirty tricks, actually threatening people in some cases. I don't know how you manage to threaten somebody into joining the military. I guess threatening to turn them in for some kind of infraction unless they join your team and risk their lives for you, help you with your commission or whatever it is you get. Other times, helping people cover things up, coming up with fake transcripts, fake high school transcripts. I mean, it's insane how desperate they've become. But they really have become desperate. They're talking now about having women soldiers in the front lines, which, to be honest, I don't have a problem with, because women, men, they're all human beings, and if you put one in the front line, you should put all of them in the front line. Just to show how crazy the whole thing is, so we can actually feel and not forget any particular type of person. Take advantage of them. Like this guy was taken advantage of. I don't know if you heard about this story. Pat Tillman reported on it, I think, on this radio program a while back. Former professional football player, his family says the Army disrespected his memory by lying in its investigation of his death in Afghanistan last year. Afghanistan, that other country we took over. In interviews with the Washington Post, the Army Ranger's mother and father say they believe the military and the government created a heroic tale about how their son died to foster a patriotic response across the country. Pat had high ideals about the country. That's why he did what he did, said Mary Tillman. The military let him down. The administration let him down. It was a sign of disrespect. The fact that he was the ultimate team player and he watched his own men kill him is absolutely heartbreaking and tragic. The fact that they lied about it afterward is disgusting. Tillman, a player for the Arizona Cardinals, left the NFL after September 11, 2001, to join the Rangers with his brother. After a tour in Iraq, they were sent to Afghanistan in 2004 to help hunt for the Taliban and Osama bin Laden. Shortly after arriving in the mountains to fight, Tillman was killed in a barrage of gunfire from his own men, mistaken for the enemy as he got into position to defend them. After a public memorial service at which Tillman received the Silver Star, the Army told Tillman's family what had really happened. The separate interviews with Tillman's parents, who are divorced, appeared on the Post internet site. That's WashingtonPost.com. Patrick Tillman Sr., a lawyer, told the Post he is furious about a botched homicide investigation and blames high-ranking Army officials for presenting outright lies to the family and to the public. After it happened, all the people in positions of authority went out of their way to script this, the father said. They purposely interfered with the investigation. They covered it up. I think they thought they could control it, and they realized that their recruiting efforts were going to hell in a handbasket if the truth about his death got out. They blew up their poster boy. In the case, this is what the Army says, in the case of the death of Corporate Patrick Tillman, the Army made mistakes in reporting the circumstances of his death in the family to the family. For these, we apologize. We cannot undo those early mistakes. Now, it's great how they can phrase something like this. The Army made mistakes in reporting the circumstances of his death. The Army lied. The Army just flat out lied. They propagandized it. They tried to create a scenario that never existed so they could get more people to follow in his footsteps and presumably meet the same fate. Yeah, they made mistakes. And what's also interesting about this is you put this side by side with the prison torture scandal that supposedly was only organized by those low-ranking officers, and you realize that all the corruption goes way up to the top. All the people in positions of authority went out of their way to script this, according to Tillman's dad, and I believe him. Disgusting. And speaking of Afghanistan, I don't know if you caught this. This is kind of interesting. Hamid Karzai, the president of Afghanistan, the president that has been put into power by the United States. I actually happen to think he's a good guy. Yes, it is possible for the United States to put a good guy in power. It can happen. And there's something about him that I think is honest, legitimate, and actually caring, which means that he's on a collision course with the U.S. government. Because they certainly don't want him to gain too much power to actually start bossing around people from the United States who are in his country. And yesterday, George W. Bush said that U.S. troops in Afghanistan will remain under U.S. control despite Afghan President Hamid Karzai's request for more authority over them. And Bush also said Afghan prisoners under U.S. control in Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, and elsewhere would be slowly returned to their home countries. We will do this over time. We have to make sure the facilities are there. Karzai wants more control over U.S. military operations in this country, and he wants custody of Afghan prisoners held by the United States and more assistance in fighting the opium trade. Karzai commented on recent reports of abuse of Afghan prisoners by their American captors. We are, of course, sad about that, he said. But he added, it does not reflect on the American people. Maybe not, but the American people voted for these people. And that's got to count for something. It's unfortunate, but it's true. So we'll see how that goes. A strained relationship is developing in Afghanistan. And we'll be, of course, following that. The U.S. has about 20,000 troops there. Not very many compared to what's going on in Iraq. And that that little venture cost about $1 billion a month. Okay, what else is going on in the world? Oh, yes. This guy, Al Zakari, supposedly has gotten injured somehow. Don't know if he fell off a horse or was injured by some kind of military operation. And it could be part of an effort to mislead the U.S. about the most wanted terror leader in Iraq. Now, there's a website. Of course, they don't tell you what the website is. If anybody has it, please let me know. The website posted a message from Abu Musab al-Zakari's group, his posse, saying that he's been wounded. The message calls on Muslims to pray for his recovery. There have been several recent reports that U.S. forces have been closing in on him. One said the U.S. military was investigating whether al-Zakari was being treated at a hospital in Ramadi, Iraq. The reports were never confirmed. It's not going to make much difference, you know, even if you do catch up to this guy, if you even find Osama bin Laden, if he even exists. There's so many people there and throughout the world who have been inspired to strike out against the U.S. that I don't think it's ever going to stop. Sadly enough. Let's see. Something else. Prosecutors say an army sergeant tracked down an unarmed Iraqi rebel during a raid and shot him repeatedly, even though the man was cooperative. These remarks came during opening statements in the soldier's court-martial in Texas on murder charges. The prosecutor says after the killing, Staff Sergeant Shane Wurst pulled out a non-U.S. military gun, fired it at the wall, and planted it on the dead man, telling other soldiers the insurgent fired at him first. The prosecutor says the killing in 2004 was payback for a mortar attack on a U.S. base that killed an officer. Defense attorneys contend Wurst was protecting another soldier when he shot the Iraqi. The 32-year-old could get life in prison without parole if convicted of premeditated murder and obstruction of justice. Let's see if this guy gets away with it, too. And let's see, the filibuster has been saved. That's right. There is a real threat that Republicans in the Senate were going to take away this traditional means of debate. And now there is a compromise that has been reached. But this goes to show how, you know, when things don't work out for one particular side, changing the Constitution, that's not a problem. It's not a problem at all. And let's see, anything else of interest? Oh, Tony the Tiger died. Yeah, the guy who does the voice of Tony the Tiger and the one who sang You're a Mean One, Mr. Grinch. Wow, he was 91 years old, and his name was Thurl Ravenscroft. All right. Oh, get this. This just in. The Sopranos might be back for yet another season. That's right. The sixth season is the one coming up next year. It's supposed to be the last one. There might be a seventh one now, they're saying. Amazing. Oh, boy. Well, last night was the season finale of 24, one of my favorite shows. I put that in quotes because of the silliness and absurdity of it all. And, wow. Well, of course, you know, if you haven't seen it, maybe you don't want to listen because I'll probably spoil a lot of things. But, of course, they save the world. They save the country. They have no problem torturing people along the way and doing whatever is right because they're doing it for a just cause. And I thought it was really funny how last week, the kid that they tortured, it was the son of the defense chief that had been kidnapped. They were torturing this kid because they thought he knew something. He was holding something back, and they didn't know what it was. That was earlier in the season. They eventually just let him go and gave up because there was nothing else he could tell them, apparently. But it was hanging over everybody's head, well, at least my head, that they had actually tortured this guy for no reason at all. Everybody else they tortured, apparently, it was justified. Even the employee of the counterintelligence unit that was falsely accused, they tortured her. And in the end, when it was realized that she was innocent, she demanded a pay raise, which meant that she was bad news, and they fired her. And the torture somehow didn't seem so bad. But in this case, this kid was tortured for no reason. Well, it turned out there was a reason. Turned out his cell phone had actually called the prime terrorist of the series. And so they dragged him back in, and they were able to go to his house and get him and bring him into the counterintelligence, counterterrorism place where the series is based. And they did all that in about 5 minutes. And in the end, it turned out that he hadn't told them that he had had an affair with another man. And while that was going on, somebody might have used his cell phone to make a phone call to the main terrorist, and hence install some magic software on his cell phone that would allow it to be bugged, and it would allow them to know where his father was going to be whenever he talked into his phone, mentioning something like that. And the reason all of this happened was because he didn't trust the government enough to confess this, to say, oh yes, by the way, I had a homosexual affair with another man, and somebody might have used my phone while this was going on. And they actually took this seriously. They said, you know, you should have told us everything. You should have told us. Did you think we would judge you? Did you think that you'd mean somehow less to us, your loving conservative family, because of this? Of course, yes, that would be the answer, but that's not the way it was played. Most absurd scenarios, I think, in the history of television on this series. It's one of the reasons why I like to watch it, because it's just crazy to see how far it actually goes. And the whole thing ended last night with, after saving the entire country yet again, the main protagonist, Jack Bauer, was fingered as somebody who followed an order given by ex-President Palmer to raid the Chinese mission, conveniently located in Los Angeles, to get somebody who was cooperating with the terrorist and find out, through torture, why this guy was doing this and where the terrorist was and what they were planning. And the only way to do that, since the Chinese were evil too and they weren't cooperating, was to raid their complex. And because the Chinese are also incompetent, they shot their own people and are now very furious and want answers. They want justice. They want to torture somebody of their own. And eventually, the blame fell upon our hero. So he had to answer for it, and he could not implicate the U.S. government. But there were elements in the administration that did not believe that was possible, so they ordered him to be killed, and in fact that was exactly what supposedly happened. Except we know better, we know that he actually escaped because of an amazing stroke of luck involving the three people that he trusted being in the same room at the same time. And nobody else being in that room, so that they could revive him and make him escape and replace his body with somebody else, who they also happen to have conveniently lying around. Yeah, that's television. That's what TV is all about, craziness like that. But it's nutty because it paints a picture that the rest of the world sees. And it sort of makes us feel that, yeah, this is acceptable. This is the way life is. Get captured by the government, you'll get tortured. And if you don't tell them everything, it's your fault. So yeah, evil as TV is, I think it's important to monitor it and to know what's going on. And also to appreciate the good things that are out there, like Family Guy. And Arrested Development, which was renewed, and Carnival, which unfortunately was not. And boy, 7th season of The Sopranos, wow. I don't know if I can handle that. All right. Speaking of TV, if you were in Dayton this past weekend, in fact, if you live in Dayton or if you were anywhere around Dayton and you happen to notice that your television set wasn't working properly, could be because of us. There was a pack of us wandering around with these little devices known as TV Begons that basically you press the button, they cycle through all possible codes of just about every TV set there is, which means that eventually it will come upon the code that will turn it off. Now, we did this a bunch of times. At one point, we were in a Japanese restaurant. For some reason, figured that its patrons would want to see a big screen of TNT, heavyweight wrestling, whatever it is they had on at that time. Yeah, this is what I want to see. This is what I want in a dining establishment that supposedly has some standards, but apparently not. Nobody was watching it either. It was just on in the background. It's crazy. But it wasn't on for long. A couple of us, you know, you have to learn how to aim this thing so it's not obvious that you're doing it. But a couple of us just were able to surreptitiously make the thing go off. And they kept turning it back on. They kept going and trying to figure out what was wrong with the TV set over and over again. And eventually they gave up and went back to making food. We turned it on and we left just so nobody would be upset. But it's amazing the power you have with a device like this. We were walking around streets, going up to bars, you know, where they were watching basketball. Okay, that was nasty, but it was funny, too. Suddenly seeing the screen go dark. Wow. But it also turns TVs on. And I was able to lean into a shop window. I think it was a pawn shop that had a whole row of TV sets lined up and turn one or two of them on. So when someone comes in the morning, they'll wonder why their TV set is on all night long. It's fun to have devices like this. It really is. You can really scare people, too, by just driving down a street really slowly, having this thing hanging out the car window, pressing the button. It takes about 60 seconds to go through all the possible codes, but those people have TV sets in their living room. Their living room that faces the street. Their living room with a nice big window to show just how big their TV set is. Those people. They will come downstairs in the morning and notice that their television set is on. Now, I imagine that might freak some people out when they come downstairs and see their TV set on. Because somebody had to turn it on, right? They're not crazy enough when they didn't turn it off at night themselves. So, yeah, you can cause all kinds of mayhem with these things. But boy, are they fun. And I intend to use them. I intend to use them in those places where TV sets are very annoying. And that's just the way it is. Okay, let's take a look at some listener mail. And again, you can write to us, otw@2600.com. Dear Emmanuel, I also happen to be watching 24. Oh boy, everyone's talking about this now. Which you talked about recently. I agree with you. I couldn't believe the way they showed the handling of a potential terror suspect. He had an alibi, no criminal past, and they still would have and did torture this guy. Of course, he was guilty, but then again, that's because it's a TV show. They portrayed the amnesty lawyer as something wrong, as doing something wrong, defending this man, like he was endangering millions of lives. Without the Constitution and our protections, what is America worth? If we don't have the security of knowing in our homes that we can be secure from search and seizure, arrest, having the threat of torture, how would this country be different from others that are less free? Also, I'd like to express how I can't believe the nightmarish debacle that the FCC has made of commercial broadcasting. I myself am an amateur radio operator, technician class, and I feel that also is being ruined by the FCC with our numbers declining. We will probably soon lose our allocated bands. Why are your numbers declining? They shouldn't be declining. Ever since the beginning of ham radio, hams have been developing technology that is later used in the commercial sector. With these insane regulations we have in place, there is no way we would be able to attract kids when they could have a cell phone and say whatever they want without censorship. Good point. The FCC needs to be updated to the current times. It's 2005, not 1934. When a station is so afraid to take a call without a delay system because of fear of a fine, that is terrorism, is it not? Well, I guess a form of mental terrorism, I suppose, that's being inflicted on us here. Even though I'm only 17, I would like to help you with the reform of the FCC in any way I possibly could. So add one email to the list, signed Frozen Dice. Thanks very much for that bit of encouragement there. It's very important. It does matter. And we will be going somewhere with this, most definitely. You're off the wall. Good show. Please put George Galloway on again. That's the British guy we had on last week, who was basically lambasting the United States administration for daring to accuse him of wrongdoing with the Food for Oil program when the U.S. is going around causing all kinds of mayhem in Iraq. Continuing here, America can't hear enough of this. Good signal tonight on 7415 kilohertz. I'm in mid-New York State. Signed, Chris. And yes, of course, we are broadcast on shortwave, 7415 on Saturday nights at 10. If you're listening at that time, hi. In fact, why don't you write to us as well? Let us know how the signal is, because we'd like to know how many people out there listen to the shortwave. It's important. Let's see what else. I was among the first group of people to email you in your effort to get 100 emails to fight against the FCC, so I'm afraid this particular letter shouldn't count in the magic number. I've got a few minutes before I have to run off and get ready for finals, so I'll try to make this quick. I've heard a lot of emails already on your show explaining why we should get involved in a campaign to make the FCC behave, but none of them have been clear on exactly what we should ask for. In this particular situation, I can see other issues such as civil rights and our need to maintain our country's tradition of a secular government, but these are other issues that demand other campaigns. To clarify our position, allow me to make the following proposal. We should start with diplomacy and, based on the results, decide if it would be appropriate to get what we want by any means necessary. This, I believe, is what we want and do not want from the FCC as a government agency. The government does belong to the people, after all. What we want the FCC to return to its intended mission to maintain a certain amount of technical order on the airwaves. This includes things such as making sure that stations use the proper equipment, preventing interference, signal drift, and the like. What we do not want, the FCC is not the Legion of Decency, so we do not want the FCC to dictate what is decent and what is obscene. We certainly do not want the FCC to be the government's auctioneer to sell off our electronic airspace to corporations. The airwaves belong to us, and we would like to keep it that way. I think we should clarify our position while we are still in the process of getting organized. I hope my attempt to do so will be helpful in this effort. And then we got another letter from this person, neither one of which is signed. I realized that I said something I wasn't quite right in my last email message. I thought I did a pretty decent job of summing up our agenda and our proposed battle with the FCC, and I was also correct in repeating the idea of remaining focused, but that's also where I made a mistake. I wrote that civil rights was a side issue that shouldn't distract us. Civil rights is the very thing we're demanding. The FCC selling out our airwaves and acting as decency police, and that's already resulted in the silencing of alternative voices and alternative viewpoints on the airwaves. I didn't mean to say that civil rights is irrelevant to our campaign, but we should focus on free expression on the airwaves and not demand other things such as freeing Mamiya, complaining about Palestine, or going into another side issue not related to electronic freedom. Perhaps on our list of demands, and we do have a list at this point, we should add the demand that the airwaves be opened up to the community somehow. Perhaps with relaxing laws against pirate stations or setting up the public access channels we should have anyway. Absolutely. Okay. Again, otw at 2600.com is our email address. What else has been going on in the news this week? You know, did you hear the story about the grenade? This was something else. In Georgia, I believe, when Bush was in Tbilisi, I think I've got the country right. Supposedly a practice grenade or dud grenade or something was found after he had been giving a speech with, was it Georgia or was it Ukraine? I'm not even sure now. I think it was Georgia. Bush had been giving a speech and the grenade was found, and it was said to have been a non-working one, an intentionally not working one. But that was changed. That story got changed after about a week or so, and suddenly the U.S. Secret Service is saying, and I think the FBI is also saying this, that no, that was a live grenade. It just failed to go off. Now, you know, I'm wondering, why did it take a week for them to make this correction? Is there perhaps more at foot here? I mean, you know, it's a great manipulation piece, I suppose. I'm not quite sure what they're manipulating us into thinking. But if someone throws a live grenade and it doesn't go off, well, you know, you generally would tell pretty quickly that that's what it was. I sure hope these people didn't, you know, toss this thing around the office thinking that it was, you know, a plastic grenade or something like that when it was actually very real. So why the delay? That's one thing. The other thing, I don't know if other people have noticed this, but I remember back when Reagan had his assassination attempt, when he was actually shot. And Reagan was not a very popular president, at least not in the circles that I moved in. Not very popular at all. But everybody was concerned. I don't recall anybody, you know, saying, boy, this is our chance, or anything like that. But in the case of Bush, I have never seen so many people say, what in God's name is wrong with this grenade here? I mean, you throw a grenade at somebody and it doesn't go off. What are the odds? What are the odds? And people really bemoaning the fate. You know, and I've seen this in so many different arenas, you know, online, in person, all different walks of life. So many people actually wishing that it had gone off. I was kind of surprised. But boy, this country has become divided. Oh, my goodness. But I think what people fail to realize is that if that grenade had gone off, it really wouldn't have made much of a difference in policy. In fact, it probably would have made things a whole lot worse. Number one, we'd have Cheney in power, which arguably we already do. But number two, we would have a lot more in the way of crackdowns, a lot more in the way of freedoms being abridged. A lot more of the same, because in a way, that kind of a thing is almost what the other side wants. They want martyrs. They want people to see that they were right. That the world is a big, horrible, ugly, nasty place. And they're all our enemies. So something like that certainly would emphasize that particular point. But wow, I was surprised. I really was. I can't believe how many people really feel so strongly about this. And I just wonder, where were these people on Election Day? If there are so many of them. It's sort of a self-fulfilling prophecy. You know, when you see the government putting walls up, you know, to separate the buildings, when you see the sharpshooters all over the place, when the president does not dare walk into a crowd of people anymore. Well, now you see why. But which came first? Was the hatred there before? It wasn't always like this, and you have to wonder where it's heading. Not to a very good place. All right, we're just about out of time. There's lots more things I would like to talk about, but as always, time is our enemy here. And I would like to be able to take phone calls again in the future. We are going to be working on solving that problem. Until that day comes, though, please send us your email and let us know what's on your mind. And we'll address it in this manner. OTW@2600.com. This is Emmanuel Goldstein. I've enjoyed being here today. And I'll probably enjoy being here again next week at this time. Till then, stay awake, stay safe, and let us know whatever's on your mind. Good night.
Hi, this is Albert Collins. When I'm out in Stony Brook, I'll be listening to WUSB FM station. When I want to listen to some good blues, that's the station you tune into.